Welcome to the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Dax, Quark, Tom, and Harry. Your hosts for today are my fellow Trek actors, Armin Shimerman and Robert Duncan McNeil. So for the complete and amazing version of this podcast, please check out patreon.com/theDeltaFlyers and sign up to become a patron today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, Robbie. Hello, Armin.
Hello, Garrett. How are you? Everybody survived the rains and the snow?
Oh, my goodness.
And the sump pump?
Yeah, you've had the rains.
Yes.
We've definitely had a lot of snow. We're getting the rains that you had as snow now up here.
So, and it's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And is your roof done? We're all following along.
I think it's done. I think all the holes have been plugged up. We have a brand new roof. And supposedly it will last 20 years. And then we'll see in 20 years how it's doing. If I'm still around. Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to be around. We're all going to come.
I'm getting louder all the time.
Me too.
How was skiing the other day, Robbie? I forgot to ask you that. Good?
Skiing was good. It was like blizzarding while I was skiing. So it's very flat light.
Yeah.
And for those that ski, if it's real flat and you're up on steep, bumpy hills, it's hard to ski in that kind of light. So that
you
was
can't
my biggest
see the terrain
issue.
Very well.
You can't. And so you think it's flat and then all of a sudden there's a 4-foot bump and you're flying in the air.
And you're
it was one of those days.
Shall I tell you why I gave up skiing?
Why?
As a young, you have no choice. as a young man, I took skiing at UCLA, which is a little hard to conceive of, but we actually skied on straw during class.
And then what?
It didn't work. And we moved very slowly down the hill because it was straw and not
right.
So when they took us on an adventure up to somewhere, I can't remember, but nearby.
Probably Big Bear, maybe?
Probably Big Bear, yeah. And okay, so now I was going downhill a lot faster than I had ever gone on straw at UCLA. And I just fell in the snow. And somebody behind me, an older gentleman, skied right into me. Skis went right into the side of just below my ribs.
It was like a Gwyneth Paltrow story.
I didn't die from it, but And it was excruciating pain. The snow bunny showed up. And she was very considerate of the man who had skied into me, but she left me in the snow, never said one word to me.
What?
Helped him down the slope. And I looked at my skis and I thought of my pain. I said, I'm never doing this again. And I kept to my word, and I've never done it since.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I can't believe you learned.
Kitty and her brothers were avid skiers and really did a lot of skiing as young people.
Well, I just want to say right off the bat, I went to UCLA like you did. And when I was there, there was no offer of skiing.
It's a class?
It's a class? Through
it's a
what?
Class.
How?
Yeah. It was a PE class.
PE?
And you know the hill that goes from the library down to the student union?
Yes. Yeah. You guys were on that hill?
Yeah.
Gosh.
That's amazing.
It's a steep hill. I mean, let's face it. Westwood UCLA is probably one of the hilliest campuses I've ever been to. And they actually provided you guys they put the straw on that hill
they
and you guys skied down.
We learned everything we were supposed to know. Of course, we didn't go very fast. And that's what this adventure was to do, was to teach us what it was like to be on real snow. I don't know if the rest of the students in my class continued to ski. I know I gave it up right then.
Oh, man.
Look, I have a question. So you're skiing on straw in the middle of the UCLA campus. Were people watching this and cheering?
Absolutely. I don't know if they were cheering. They were probably laughing. But certainly that walkway that I was just mentioning to Garrett, which is frequented by the entire student body.
Oh, yeah. Very busy.
Yes, they must have seen us, you know, and laughed at watching us halting our way down the straw on the side of the road.
That's amazing.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I I'm so happy to inform everyone that Armin's microphone is properly connected now.
Yay! Oh, that's so much better,
Armin. I sat
Armin.
There and I said, he is so echoey today. I don't know what's going on. And then we troubleshot it and we figured it out.
Yeah.
And we're all good to go now.
Well, we were on Yeah, go ahead, Armin.
So now you know what it sounded like to me when I was in the prosthetic head. It was
there you go.
It was always a little muffled and far away.
That's funny.
Wow.
Also,
it sounds much better. Yes. Sounds so much better.
It does.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes. There you go.
So right before we begin speaking of this episode, we will talk about birthdays, which we love to do. So first of all, I would like to say, well, we would all like to say happy birthday to Pamela Miller. March 29th is her birthday. Happy birthday, Pamela.
Happy birthday, Pamela.
Happy birthday, Pamela Miller, March 29th. Happy birthday.
And
who else we got? Who else?
We also have Tara Poland. Tara Poland, March 30th, a day later after Pamela. Happy birthday, Tara.
Happy birthday, Tara.
Happy birthday to Tara. Happy birthday to Tara. Happy birthday on March 30th. Happy birthday to Tara. There you go, Tara.
And many more.
And happy birthday to Pamela the day before. I just have to throw her name in there.
Yes, okay. Yes.
All right. All right. Let's talk about this episode. Let's start off with, first of all, I just want to say,
yes,
The Forsaken. Did you know that the working title of this episode was Only the Lonely, the title of the Roy Orbison song?
No.
And then it became The Forsaken. So
very different, which was also a movie back in the 90s. There was a movie called The Forsaken.
Right.
Interesting.
And you remember also, Robbie, on Voyager, we would get scripts where there would be working titles, which then changed and it would say formerly known as. And how often does that happen? I'm just wondering why they keep changing these.
Well, titles. We did one earlier on this podcast. It was called Move Along Home, which I'm quite sure had a different title when I shot the episode.
Right.
Oh,
I just
don't remember
what it was.
Wow.
How funny.
And then they changed it way later. Okay. All right. Shall we do our poetry synopsis?
Let's do. I would love to. You want me to start with my limerick?
Of course.
I always love a limerick to start us off. Here we go. For The Forsaken, my poetry synopsis goes a little something like this. The computer makes Miles pretty upset, and Loxana tries to catch Odo in her net. Bashir shows ambassadors around the station. They finally show him some appreciation, and Miles now has a new computer pet.
Yeah, look at that. Tight.
Yeah.
Love it. I love it.
There you go. Okay. There's a little limerick. I'm sure Bob Picardo would not like my rhyme and rhythm, but
I think you have an issue with that one time that Bob
he was very critical of me. You.
Yeah.
And I was not in the tempo format that he wanted.
Yeah, but I thought it was overly critical. I'm going to be on your side. I felt for you.
Listen,
I did.
Just let me say that I'm the English professor, and I'm happy with it.
Thank you, Armin.
Here you go.
I'm telling
here
Bob.
You go.
Thank you.
Yes, tell Bob. Tell Bob.
Yes. I defer to Armin on this one as well. I think that's right. When he criticized you, Robbie, I know he was joking. I know he was joking.
But I think he was. That's what we do. That's my bit with Bob.
It did hurt me because I feel like the limericks that you have come up with,
they're hard.
The limericks that Rebecca has helped you with have been amazing. I love them. And
thank
so
you. Thank you
when
very much.
He was critical, I really
felt bad for me.
I did. I felt bad and I felt a little bit upset with him. I was like, how dare you, Bob Picardo? How dare
I'm telling him now, Armin, the English professor, has given me the stamp of approval.
Stamp of approval.
So there you go.
All right.
Exactly.
Okay. Here's my haiku for The Forsaken. Delegates arrive. Bashir must babysit them. Chief builds a doghouse.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Okay. You got the pet. You got the doghouse,
the pet
in there too.
Well, you ended with the pet. I ended with the pet. So we're good. Armin, do you have an etymology of the
Forsaken? I don't write poetry. I just grade it.
Okay.
So the word forsaken is a relatively old word in the English language.
Okay.
It was first used in, at least according to the Oxford English Dictionary, the first citation is in 1305.
Wow.
That's when the language wasn't anything like what we understand English to be. So, you know, when that operator with Yeshua, that's old, that's Middle English.
Wow.
So
that sounded cool. Sorry.
That's the opening lines of Canterbury Tales.
Oh, is it?
When that opera with Yeshua Rasuta, the Druch Tamar, Chepersa to the Ruta, in every vein, in which sweet liquor, of which vertu, Ajandur. That's.
Wow.
So it sounds
I told
more
you
Latin.
I was an English teacher.
Yeah, it sounds more Latin.
No, it's not Latin.
It almost sounds Celtic or something.
It is closer to Celtic than
more Scandinavian. More Scandinavian.
It could be. Yes, it's very influenced by Scandinavian.
Okay, that's what it is. That's what I heard. Okay,
very cool.
The OED, Oxford English Dictionary, says the definition is deserted, left solitary or desolate. The great poet Spenser, a Renaissance English poet, said forsaken, woeful, solitary maid. It's a lovely old word. And compared to all the technobabble that's in this episode, it's a great juxtaposition to have a title from Middle English as opposed to all the technical terms that we have in the 24th century.
Hmm. I like
that. And Garrett, what did you say the Roy Orbison song, Only the Lonely?
Only the Lonely, yes.
Which is interesting. The etymology is very sad. It's very, there's something very emotional about the word.
Mm-hmm.
And then that song that was the other option is also Only the Lonely is also very sad.
Yeah.
Sad title. So,
and if you look behind the comedy in this episode, it is very sad.
Yeah.
It is very sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This episode was written as a bottle show to save money at the end of season one. That's another fact that I found on the interwebs.
Mm-hmm. But they had a whole Odo liquidization moment. So that can't be cheap.
Yeah. That was.
It wasn't cheap. That's probably why they gave up on it after a very short time after.
Yeah. They were done. Yeah. But it was that one shot though, right? So, but that's still
going to
be. And you know what? Let me take that back. Mm. That wasn't a CGI. I think that was makeup. Him sweating and the makeup coming off. I think that wasn't CGI.
Yeah, that was makeup.
Makeup. So it's a lot cheaper. It's a lot cheaper.
Yeah. But he does go into Gwaxana's dress at the
very
end.
Absolutely. But we don't see him turn into that. We see the liquid going into the folds of the dress.
Yes, that's cheaper, correct?
That's cheaper.
Yes, okay. So that's the bottle version of his liquid state, not showing him from human into liquid, but just the liquid. Because you're right, it didn't show him on that. It just showed the liquid going into the dress.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
They were learning about this transformation themselves, I would think, that first season.
Yeah.
Yes, because it was very expensive. And and they were learning that this is probably not something they were going to do on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Teleplay by Don Carlos Dunaway. You like that? I gave it
a little
on the first two names and then not on the last. Okay. And Michael Piller. Story by Jim Trombetta. And directed by our good friend, Uncle Les Landau, who we loved. And did you like working with Les, Armin?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, because Robbie and I adored Les.
I loved him.
We love Les Landau, definitely. Guest stars, Majel Barrett as Luoxana Troy. Interesting, she doesn't have Roddenberry at the end of the name in the credit here.
Well, that's her SAG name.
Okay. Thank you for clearing that up. I did not know that. Constance Towers as... Is it Tosco or Toxco? I'm not
Toxco,
sure.
Toxco.
Yeah, Toxco. Michael Ensign as Lojal. I did not know Ensign was a last name, which now makes me wonder if Michael Ensign indeed was in the Navy as a young man and an ensign, he would be Ensign Ensign.
He would be Ensign Ensign. Now, Ensign has other definitions besides a ranking.
Naval ranking. Okay.
Yeah. The person who held the flag in the Middle Ages in battle, that was the ensign. So that is why Iago in Othello he's not an ensign, he's not in the Navy, but he is Othello's flag bearer, and he is an ensign.
Wow. Interesting.
Look at that.
The flag bearer.
Yeah.
That's probably where the name, Michael Ensign's name came from, ancestor was a flag bearer on the battlefield. Wow.
And ensign's much more efficient and economical. I mean, his last name was Michael Flagbearer. It's just too long.
Yeah.
Much too long.
It's a lot for SAG. Yeah. That's a long SAG name.
We also have Mr. Jack Shearer in his very first Star Trek appearance as Vadoja, the Bolian ambassador. Do you remember, Robbie, where he showed up in Voyager?
Jack? No, who was he?
Jack was in the episode Non Sequitur, where I go back to Earth and I have to go to that briefing of that meeting. And yes. I'm talking about the new runabout and all the admirals are there. The main admiral was Jack Shearer. And I'm trying to discuss a design idea that I did not design because I'm another Harry Kim. So,
yep,
that's Jack Shearer, that really commanding voice that he has.
He was great.
He does mm-hmm. have a commanding voice.
Yeah. Like when he speaks, you stop, you listen. So he went to be a human admiral.
Yeah. I like mm-hmm. particularly when he was talking about Taxco, the Constance Towers character, and she was repressed and all of that. And it's very funny. He just had a ton of character behind all that makeup, mm-hmm. as you do, Armin. You got to fight through that makeup sometimes. And I thought he did a great job.
Yes. He did a phenomenal job. I loved his voice. I hope he does a lot of voiceovers.
Yeah, for sure. Last but not least, we also have Benita Andre as Anara, the Bajoran engineer who helps O'Brien figure out what's going on with the computer.
Is she it felt like they were introducing a new recurring character. Yeah. Does she become a recurring kind of character, Armin?
No. Oh.
Oh, wow.
It did. The way she was interacting, I was like, oh, this is a new recurring.
That's going to be Miles's second banana or something.
Yes, second in command.
Yeah.
No, they tried, we saw that with the security person.
That's right.
They tried those on for size, but for whatever reason, of which I was never privy to, mm-hmm. They would use them and then they would lose them.
Wow.
Interesting.
So we don't see Roy Rogers as Robbie refers to him.
However, there is a character that has maybe one word or a line. Forgive me, Randy, for not remembering. But he actually stayed around for the entire 7 years because he was not only the speaking character as an ensign in this episode, but he was also Renee's stand-in. So.
Was that the security ensign? I noticed.
In this episode, he's in very briefly. But he is the stand-in not only for Renee, but also various other people as well.
Other guest stars and things. But he I did notice, there was a security guy that normally they don't give those one-line roles to anybody. They'll have the loop group put it off camera or something. Right. Mm-hmm. But you saw this one actor with a line. I was like, oh wow, that's surprising that they put that on camera and spent the money because they weren't known for that.
They did at the end in season 7 they were actually quite good about giving the stand in some lines.
So that's great.
Wow.
And I would say often those kind of things are pushed by the line producer. Who was your line producer? Was it Steve Oster?
Steve was the line producer.
Yeah. I bet Steve was the one.
Very likely, yeah.
Yeah, that said, we need to give these guys a little something here for all the hard work they've done. Yeah. That's usually because the writers and those producers don't really know the stand-ins. They're never around. They don't know them. They don't know how hard they work. But the line producer, like we had Mary Howard, and she would tell the writers, hey, you need to do this. You know, give them a little something, a line here or something.
Yeah. Which they appreciated, obviously.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a huge deal to say something for sure. Okay, so we start off with the station log. We have been honored with a visit by a delegation of Federation ambassadors on a fact-finding mission to the wormhole. Fortunately, I have just the officer to take them off my hands. And the minute we're in Quark's, I thought, Robbie's going to love this episode because it's Bashir who has to take care of this.
Well, Robbie. I like the station log. Because you get in that station log that Sisko doesn't want anything to do with these people.
Not a thing.
Before you even see anyone on screen, you know he wants to stay away from them. So, we go to Quark's. There's Bashir awkwardly trying to entertain and distract these ambassadors. And he makes up some kind of recalibration sweep. That's why Sisko's not here. Yes. And then the Vulcan says he wants to see it. I'd love to see a recalibration sweep. And then Bashir tries to suggest a holosuite. Maybe we should go to a holosuite, which this is the moment that I love because the female ambassador, Taxco, who is Constance Towers.
Yeah.
And she's a very successful, I would argue, famous actress, Constance Towers. She's done a ton of work. She played this beautifully, this a bit uptight Taxco character.
Yeah.
She's very offended about the holosuite.
Yeah.
And this is where the Bolian ambassador says, Arbazons are sexually repressed, which I loved.
Yeah.
And then we hear a scream from some other part of Quark's.
From the gambling area.
Yes, actually. The gambling area. It's Luxana.
It is hard to say it, isn't it? Because you want to say Luxana. You don't want to even hit the W. You want to go right to the vowel, but no.
I will admit I misspelled it in most of my notes. I spelled it Luxwana, which is how I want to pronounce it. Luxwana. That's what I want to say, but it's Luxana. Luxana.
Yeah, you want to forget about the L. Just touch on the L. It's the W you want to
stress. Luxana.
That's it.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Thanks, Armin. You are an English teacher. You're a speech teacher, too.
Or use the original Karate Kid to help you. Locks on, locks off, and maybe that helps you.
There you go. Yes, but Majel Barrett screams from the gambling area.
Does it bear telling people who Majel Barrett is? Does everybody know?
Please.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes.
Armin, who is Majel Barrett?
I'm sorry, I opened my mouth. Majel Barrett is Mrs. Jean Roddenberry, the third, I believe. Forgive me if I've got it wrong. The third Mrs. Jean Roddenberry.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't tell me more about
I
that.
That.
I did not know that.
I thought she was first. Okay.
Oh, no. She was not first. No.
She was the longest, though.
She's the one that inherited.
Yes. held the title the longest of all.
And she's also, as everyone must know, she is she's the voice of the computer on Next Generation. And I think she becomes the voice of the computer for Deep Space Nine eventually. Mm. But I don't
remember. She was our voice.
She's our voice for Voyager. Yeah.
For Voyager. Yeah.
So, she's also the owner of all the Tribbles. So if you want to if you want to create a toy that looks like a Tribble, you have to pay the Roddenberry family, and of which she was the main
beneficiary
at the time before she passed away, and then their son, Rod, became the person in charge.
Yeah.
Did you, Armin? I have a question. Did you ever go to Majel's house?
Yes. Yes. In fact, in this episode, she said, "Oh, let's have a party." She threw parties all the time.
Yep.
I went to about, I would say, half a dozen of them. They were always fun. And what she always was trying to do was bring the various shows together. She would invite the actors from all the various shows together so that there was a sense of family amongst the shows, not just amongst the one show, but amongst all the shows.
Yeah.
And I was very grateful for her doing that. Majel was a terrific lady, but we all were a great applause for what she tried to do and what she always did. When we did conventions together or cruises together, she was always the den mother. She brought everybody.
Yeah, together. That's a great way to put it. I went to only one party at her house, but it was a Super Bowl party. It was so much fun. And I had forgotten the way you describe it, that she brought all the shows together to try to create that unity and that sense of family. And I forgot about that part, but you're absolutely right. It's where I got to meet a lot of the other actors from the other shows, was at that party. So
she was a great, great lady. And
lovely lady.
Anyway, so that's the background on Majel Barrett.
She's very good in this episode, too.
Yes, she is.
She's really relaxed.
I did not remember her being this good, but watching her in this, and it's a relatively hard thing to do.
Yep.
She is both obnoxious and sweet and sexy and real all at the same time.
Yeah,
I knew Robbie was going to ask that question or bring up that story about the one
the
time
party.
We went. Yes,
it's the only time I went once.
I got to say, there's a couple of regrets that I have from the old days of filming. And regret number one was not taking up Bill Shatner's offer of coming to his horse show, which he offered every single year, and I never did it. And secondly, was not taking up Majel's offer of coming to one of her parties, which she invited me to every single one that she had. And I did not go. I mean,
you never went?
No, dude. And I'm so, if I'm telling you, if someone invents a time machine, please contact me, because I need to go back to go to Majel Barrett's party, because
you really missed something, because they were wonderful. And it was very home style. She made the food herself.
Yeah,
she made sure that everybody was comfortable. Yes, there were a lot of Super Bowl parties, but there were other holidays also celebrated at Majel's. It was just a very homey situation.
Yeah.
I saw her when she was on the set of Voyager once, Robbie. She was in the wheelchair at the time, though. So I said hello to her then, and that was it.
Okay, so we hear Majel Barrett scream. We go over. She says, Loxana, I'm going to say it right. Loxana claims that someone stole her brooch, her hair brooch. And Quark reminds her that the sign reads, "We are not responsible." I love this. You point to a sign over the door, Armin. And it looks like the tiniest writing. I've never noticed it.
Yeah, it's because it's not there often. It was there only for this episode. Oh, that's the only time that sign was there.
That's funny. That's very funny. Well, it's so small, you wouldn't know if it was there or not. Right.
Yeah.
But I love that it's like this fine print when you sign, like, you know, apply for something, or you know, it's all the pages that you have to approve of stuff you never read. It's that kind of thing that Quark has. But Odo arrives in the scene. She demands that someone find this brooch of hers. And we learn that she can read minds. She is an empath, but she can't read Ferengi minds. So she can't read Quark's mind. And Odo looks around and he sees a Dopterian.
Okay.
Another one of those once in a millennium characters that show up on Star Trek.
What does that alien remind you two of? The Dopterian.
A lizard. I don't know what.
Dobby from the Harry Potter franchise.
Yeah,
Dobby. He stole the Latinum hair brooch. But Robbie, you skipped over one of the most important parts of the scene, which is when Loxana grabs Quark's ear aggressively. And she calls him. She goes, he says, "Not my ear, please." And like, "Yes, and I know where it hurts the most, you little troll." And I was like, "Oh, she just called Armin a troll." But that was a pretty
So hardcore Armin, the scene. Ear is a
erogenous zone.
Erogenous zone and very
a pressure.
Oh,
point
so it would
too.
Be like grabbing you by the
Yes, ooh, it would. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Now that makes sense.
Yeah.
Ooh, wow.
You can either caress it or you can
Oh,
that's what it was.
Yeah. And of course, I have no, as the actor, I have no sense of how
right.
hard
you feel nothing. Yeah.
I feel nothing.
That's funny.
But
I thought about
that.
That's
what makes you such a good actor.
It.
You played it like it was painful. So we like that.
Yes. Yes.
Any thoughts on working with her or any memories of that?
She was always a delight. Mm. And maybe because I knew that from our personal interactions. Although at that time, I probably hadn't gone to that many parties, hadn't gone to a party yet, because this is early on in the first season. Mm-hmm. But she was charming, always charming, and just a lovely person to be around. And I'm mixing up my times with her on the set with my times, personal times.
Right.
Just a lovely, lovely lady. Just made the franchise just seem family, really family.
And this is actually, according to the interwebs, the first of three Loxana Troi appearances on DS9. So
Actually, my first appearance in Next Generation, she was in that episode.
Yes, she did a TNG episode as well. Menage a Trois, that Troi, that one, or another episode?
I don't think it's Menage a Trois. I don't remember the name of the episode.
Okay, but it wasn't Menage a Troi at all.
I don't think so. No.
All right. That's the one that they refer to later, though. Like when she's with Odo and she says, "Like, oh, Damon, that you know, whatever." She that's in reference to that TNG episode, Menage a Troi.
Oh, how funny.
That's what that was. Yeah. Okay.
Well, she does think initially that Quark might have her brooch, but we learn that she cannot read Ferengi minds here. Mm-hmm. Odo looks around. And he sees this other alien, this one-off alien, who tries to run out. Odo grabs him, bends him over a counter or something, and starts emptying his pockets of all kinds of things. He's got a communicator in there, which I thought was very funny.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Communicator? He did.
Well, I thought he gave up the goods too quickly because he goes, "Empty your pockets." And the guy just pulls everything out. Like, he doesn't even, like most criminals, like, "I don't have anything," right?
He had a lot of stuff in there. He had a communicator because Odo says, "Oh, well, since when did you join Starfleet?" So, very funny.
All right.
He does find the brooch. Mm-hmm. Loxana is very grateful. And as Odo leaves, Loxana goes to Bashir, and she's very interested in finding out more about Odo. Mm-hmm. She's smitten with him. He's strong and her hero, and it's a great moment.
Mm-hmm.
We go to Ops next, and we see Miles is running a diagnostic on the fusion power plant.
And I have to say, to give it to Cullum. My God, they threw every technobabble word they could possibly think of.
Yes.
And he got them down perfectly. I just kept thinking, how many strange words does this poor man have to memorize?
Yeah. And you had mentioned before that Cullum doesn't learn his lines ahead of time very often.
He didn't later on. Whether he did at the beginning, that I can't tell you. But I certainly came to realize after a period of time that he wasn't memorizing early.
Yeah.
So, but he was very good at spouting all that technobabble.
Mm-hmm. I just had a memory, Armin. I'm going to go off on a tangent for a minute. I was on a soap opera in the 80s in New York, All My Children, and there was an older actor, James Mitchell, who was Agnes DeMille's lead male dancer. Mm-hmm. He was in all kinds of old Hollywood movies and shows. James never learned his lines for All My Children, for the soap. And this is 1 hour every single day, right? We did have teleprompters, but what James would do is he would always have mail in a scene. He'd have envelopes that he's going through, and he'd write his lines on the mail. So he'd be talking to you, but pretending to look at his mail, but his lines were on the mail. And I remember I was like 19 when I was on this show. I remember going, God, that's genius. How does he do it? And it's so natural. So it reminds me of Cullum. That's what I'm saying. I have a feeling Cullum probably had lines.
He did, he? I never saw it. No, I mean, there are lots of scenes with Cullum that I wasn't in.
Yeah.
But I never saw him refer to something that he
wrote. Oh, wow.
Nor did Sid, for that matter.
Okay.
Then I'm very impressed. Yeah. They did not go the James Mitchell route and write it on envelopes.
I was the first Voyager person to do the James Mitchell route, which I got criticism from Tim Russ when he saw what I did. And then 2 weeks later, he did the exact same thing I did. So yes. I took black electrician's tape, pasted it on my console, and silver Sharpie my lines on the black tape. When I came in 2 weeks later, Tim Russ had typed it up at home and cut the paper out.
He would cut the paper and put it in different spots on his console so he could look around.
Yeah, because he stole it from me. I basically stole it from James Mitchell, not knowing James Mitchell, but in the
and
essence
then
and
Robert
spirit
Beltran
of James
stole it from
he stole
all
it
of
from
you
all of us.
He would
yes.
take his little sides and rip the just his lines and tape them onto the center console. Oh, we were such cheats.
You guys are smarter than I was. I just rehearsed everybody during the weekend.
Good for you. That's the right way to do it. So Miles is in ops. He's running this diagnostic on the computer. We learn that this is a Cardassian computer because he starts arguing with the computer, basically.
Yeah.
He tries to override the computer. He basically wants to go higher than the Cardassian limits allow or something on this.
Right.
And so he tries to override it and do that. But the computer just shuts down the reactor. So they're basically arguing here.
It's a sassy Cardassian computer.
It really is.
Yeah. And in fact, I was surprised and happy that they did this because it always sort of bothered me early on that Federation was able to come in and use all these computers very easily from day one.
Yes.
I know as a Luddite and an older person, that it takes me a week, 2 weeks to figure out all the yings and yangs of a new computer. And it usually takes me much longer than that to be really good at it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The fact that they could do this just like that in the first episode, now they're addressing the fact that it is a Cardassian computer.
Well, let's also not ignore the fact that if this is a Cardassian computer, then the displays, any type of buttons or consoles, any labeling will be in Cardassian language, English.
Were. And they
right?
were.
Yes.
And they were.
Oh, they were?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So,
but how would they read that then?
I mean, the
wow.
The things that the Okudas put around all the displays, they were all in Cardassian.
Right.
Wow. Well, what they thought was good Cardassian.
Right.
But you're right. Well, how could they read the displays?
How's he going to read that?
They would all be in Cardassian.
Yeah.
And that is to say that perhaps the universal translator that we all take for granted, that we can understand everybody else, maybe includes the ability to tell you, can read Cardassian and translate it in your ear for what it is. Maybe.
Oh, interesting. Maybe. Okay, so we're still in ops. Cisco arrives. Miles is very frustrated. Miles says he's going to rebuild the entire computer if he has to because it's his arch enemy. And Cisco tries to calm him down. I love in the scene where O'Brien says, I'll have to do a root canal.
Right.
Cisco's like, a root canal? And O'Brien says, it's engineering shorthand, sir. But he doesn't explain what a root canal is. It's, I guess it's a procedure.
Yeah.
An engineer's procedure is very funny.
But then, you know, you assume that this is going to take, like, I don't know, a couple of weeks. And then he says, oh, no more than 2 to 3 years to do this. I'm like, what? 2 to 3 years? Oh, my gosh.
I did like in this episode, too. Did you notice Avery was smiling a lot in this episode? I noticed it right off the bat. He seemed to be smiling, just enjoying some of these scenes. He enjoyed the scene with Colm. He was kind of laughing and smiling, and not in a mean way, just enjoying himself.
But didn't it seem, Robbie, like as if he didn't have to deal with any of the drama in this episode? That's so right. He was like, you deal with that. I love watching this. So he was a spectator in a way.
He was very
and
much.
And he loved it. And it was like, oh, yeah. So, yeah, right. He does smile.
And it is sort of explained when he's, you know, in the future scene we're going to talk about, where he explains to Bashir that he used to have to do all this stuff and now he's free from it.
Yeah.
So he's happy about that.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of Bashir, the turbo lift arrives in ops. There's Bashir with the ambassador. Cisco turns to hide from them, but he's caught and he gets a big smile on his face, welcomes them. And Taxco, our female ambassador, complains about her horrible accommodations. And as she's complaining, Kira announces there's an unidentified vessel coming through the wormhole. No life signs on this vessel, though. Yeah. But it has an extensive computer array that's trying to keep contact with its mothership, perhaps. Dax suggests towing it into the dock, and the ambassadors want to stay and watch this procedure and maybe help. But Cisco says, oh, no, I will brief you at 0400 hours. He's going to get them out of there and tells Bashir to take them to watch at the docking ring. So he's not going to spend a moment with them. It was a fun scene. I liked in the scene where Lojal says, obviously, this young woman doesn't have the necessary experience, talking about Dax. And Bashir says, this young woman over there has 300 years of experience, Ambassador, which is very
it's a great line. But don't you think the ambassador to the Vulcan planet, I mean, wouldn't he know what a Dax is? I mean, wouldn't he see the markings on her face and say, like, yeah, we know that the symbiont has been in this body for X amount of years and this, or maybe he's thinking this is the first lifetime of the symbiont. So maybe that's why.
But you're right. I didn't think about it. The spots would definitely give it away.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
Yeah. We go into the security office now. Mm-hmm. Odo's, there with Luoxana.
That's good. Good. Yeah,
thank you. Luoxana basically is stalking him, is what I'm going to say. He's in there. She pops in, tells him that he's basically her hero. He keeps everyone safe on this entire ship. He's basically a superhero. And asks Odo about his name. He says, is that your first or last name?
He answers yes.
Very clever.
I love the writing in this episode. Yes. I'm just going to say there's some brilliant writing in this episode.
Yeah. But she does tell him in the scene that she knows he's a shapeshifter and loves that he can mold himself because she always has to mold the men in her life, but he can mold himself. And then she tries to kiss him in the scene.
Yes.
And as she's trying to kiss him, I love Renee's comic timing on this when he turns his head and goes, was that the calm?
Yeah. I'm going to go to ops. See ya.
He runs.
Oh, God. So funny.
Very funny.
So funny.
They're a funny couple, these two. I mean, as actors, it's an interesting partnership because Armin, you're right. She's very natural she's big and flamboyant on one hand, but it's very grounded.
It's very grounded. She's very blousy, but she's very grounded. And I was fascinated. She didn't try to overact. It is major in a slightly different you know, dress and everything. But it is Majel, and so it's very real. I was actually very impressed watching her performance.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I've ever seen her on a Star Trek show. I know she's done TNG and your show, but I've never seen those episodes. And I think I was expecting a less natural performance, a more forced, you know, yeah, kind of.
My memory is that's what I thought. That's why I was surprised watching this episode, because my memory that she was too flamboyant.
Big. Yeah.
And then watching this episode, I went, no, Armin, you're wrong. This is right on the money. This is right. This is perfect.
I agree.
In fact, the person that I think is overacting is my good friend Renee. I think Renee is overacting.
Well, maybe. I mean,
in what scene? In this scene?
All the way through. Overall? Although I must say, it tickled me no end that he was getting a little of his own. The very thing that he does to me on a regular basis for 7 years, he gets a little of that back from Majel in this episode.
Yeah, it's funny to see Odo in the kind of the lower status position, I guess. You know,
that's
the
right.
Well, it's unusual to see him in that.
It's unusual, but it's also endearing to see that. You know, now you see his vulnerable side. Because what have we seen so far? He's rough. He's tough. He's always giving it to Quark.
Arrogant.
The guy is just, you remember that prior episode when he goes to Sisko's office? He goes, look, it's either me or Roy Rogers. I know who's it going to be? Because I quit. You know, like this guy is hardcore. And this is the one episode where there's awesome character development. Awesome vulnerability, and he finally gets what's coming to him in a way. So I really love that interaction between those two. Yeah.
We're back up in ops after Odo runs away from Luoxana. We're back up in ops. Miles and Dax are running scans of this probe that's appeared out of nowhere. The computer now seems to be cooperating, the Cardassian computer that Miles was arguing with before.
Surprisingly, suddenly, yes.
Yeah, surprising Miles. He doesn't expect this, but everything seems to be working great, cooperating. And Odo arrives, goes straight into Sisko's office, ringing the doorbell.
Great scene,
I didn't know there was a doorbell on the...
Is there? What?
Yeah, he rings a doorbell. He pushes a button or something. Ding dong. There's a sound.
Really?
Which I thought was interesting.
I didn't think there. Okay.
I don't
you
think
definitely
there
heard
either.
That? He hit a button and it went bing bong?
Yeah, because it's a glass door. It's got kind of, you can see in, and you see him at the door and he reaches over and you hear a little sound.
Wow.
Then the door opens. Yeah.
Okay.
Which
okay.
I thought was new. I hadn't seen that before.
Yeah.
But Odo is freaking out, telling Sisko he's got a problem, a big problem. That Luoxana is very grateful for what he did. And now she's interested in him and she's being very aggressive. He just comes out and says it.
Yeah.
This is the scene where Avery was smiling the whole time. I just loved it.
Well, my favorite line, Odo says, she's extremely aggressive. And Sisko says, I see. So she's after you like a Wanoni trace hound is what he says.
Right. That's right. Whatever that is.
Whatever which that is. You don't even have to know what that is. You understand the meaning of it.
From the trace hound part. Yeah. Sisko's very amused. He says, I can't help you. You're going to have to handle this on your own with great delicacy. He suggests.
Yes, and, don't you understand? This is Mrs. Jean Roddenberry.
Yes, exactly.
Are you sure you don't want her to catch you? This is Mrs. Jean Roddenberry.
Exactly.
Yeah, but Odo does say, I do not handle delicacy very well, which is true from what we've seen with Odo so far. He's not a delicate character, for sure.
Right.
He's not a wallflower. That's true.
No, he's not. We go into ops and Inara, this new Bajoran assistant that I thought was going to be recurring, but I guess not. But Inara tells Miles that they have the analysis of the probe. Dax and Kira join them over there in the corner. They realize there's no people, no communication system. no, nothing, just a giant floating computer. This whole
it's a mystery. It's a mystery. Yeah. They don't know what it is. But I want to say something about this guest star or this co-star. I think she did a great job. I really liked it. I mean, she was very natural. Benita Andre, if you're listening, you did a wonderful job and you should have been on more episodes. For sure.
She should have. And again, an incredibly real, down-to-earth, straightforward delivery.
Natural. Oh, my God.
Just adored what she was doing. Yeah. She took all this. She, too, had technobabble. Unlike Cullum, who's been doing it for years, this is her first stab at it, and she hit it out of the park.
Yeah.
You know, when people talk about, oh, yeah, Star Trek shows will never get nominated for acting Emmys because it's just known as a kid's show, that makes me so mad because I say I always tell people it's very difficult to act on a Star Trek show, especially if you're a guest star with the technobabble and being able to deliver that naturally. I'd venture any actor to try this out and say this is a kid show. It's like, no, it's not easy. So
yeah,
Benita made it look easy. Good job.
She did. She did.
This summer's must-read mystery is Meredith Adamo's Not Like Other Girls. A girl's search for her missing classmate digs up dangerous secrets in this unputdownable feminist thriller, perfect for fans of Veronica Mars and A Good Girl's Guide to Murder.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I noticed for the first time her costume, Benita's costume, imitated Kira's costume. It was a different color. And of course, we know that different colored costumes mean something for Federation.
Yes.
But I noticed, hers is purple, whereas Kira's is a tawny red or something like that.
Yeah.
And I thought, is this so? I was never sure whether Kira was wearing a uniform or whether those were her clothes. But now I come to see, it was a uniform. Mm. And yet we never really deal with that at all.
Yeah.
And if it is a uniform, a uniform of what? Because Kira was a terrorist. It's not like she belonged to, unless somehow she's a major now. So she's a major of what? That's the question for me.
Right.
Major in what?
Mm-hmm. Well, also talking about Bajoran uniforms and colors, we do know that Odo and the rest of his Bajoran personnel are in that beige, that tan. And that was actually a line that Lwaxana used earlier when she was trying to seduce him. If you remember, she goes, to be a member of the thin beige line. Because you hear about, if you think about American police thin officers, line, the thin blue line is used and they use thin beige line in this episode.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Good catch. But he's security. Mm-hmm. They're somehow military.
Right.
Yeah.
So I would like to, you know, later on we'll ask about what's the scene that's missing. I might say that's the scene that's explained to me the uniform.
The uniform, the Bajoran, the Bajoran military ranks and uniforms.
Exactly.
Agreed.
There you go.
Well, we do go down to the promenade. We see Odo very tentatively stepping off the turbo lift or the lift. He looks both ways. And then he sees Lwaxana, but he tries to get back on, but she sees him and catches up to him. And she tells him that she's got a romantic holodeck prepared for them, that Quark has made them a picnic basket for this romantic date. And he says, no, I have to be at the upper pylon 3 immediately. So she jumps on the lift with him to ride up to the upper pylon. And
before you continue on the lift, evidently that earlier scene when he looks around and he sees the coast is clear and he kind of walks, it sort of duplicated a scene from TNG where Picard came out of something and he's looking around again. Luxana was chasing after Picard, and same, so very similar setup.
Oh, that's funny.
According to the interwebs. So just want to throw that in.
Very funny. I like when Luxana gets on the lift with him and she bangs on the wall. Do you remember that?
Yeah, she hits the wall. Yes. Like she's Fonzie or something. She's dunk.
Banging on the wall and telling the lift to take them to Upper Pylon 3. She's always wanted to see Upper Pylon 3. Anyway, they're on the lift. And Luxana says she'll have Quark send up their picnic basket to Upper Pylon 3 so they can have it up there. Mm-hmm. Odo says, you know, I'm liquid. I don't eat. I don't have an esophagus. I can't chew food. I can't do a picnic. But suddenly the lift freezes and Odo calls ops.
This is my favorite line in the whole thing. When he says, I don't eat. This is not a real mouth. It's an approximation of one. I don't have an esophagus or a stomach or a digestive system. Every 16 hours, I turn into liquid. And she goes, I can swim. Oh, yeah, I was like, look at these writers. Yes.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah. Odo does call ops and informs them that the power to the pylons has failed. In ops, they try to beam them out of the turbo lift, but there's no luck. They can't do it.
There's an issue here of continuity, yes. Because he says, Kira says, go ahead, Odo. And Odo goes, Ambassador Choi and I are stuck in Turbo Lift 7. Later, they are stuck in Turbo Lift 4. So it's like, what? So they missed that. So whose job is it? Script supervisor should have caught that? Or who should have caught that?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Judy Brown should have got it. Yeah, she's the script supervisor. Or certainly the director or somebody in editing should have realized that.
Someone in the writing department that proofreads it? Yeah, I don't know.
They should have corrected it in ADR.
Yeah.
Also, the writer's assistant goes through these scripts and looking for those kind of things, typos continuity problems. So there's multiple layers of...
So are we talking about Lolita Fatcho now?
It would be Lolita. Lolita should have... Well, first of all, the writer should have caught it. Second of all, maybe the studio or network that read the script and gave notes could have pointed it out.
Yes.
Third of all, Judy Brown, Lolita, maybe Rick the Berman. Actors.
Maybe the actors.
There's a lot of people that could have said, hey, I said I'm in Turbo Lift 7, but then later I say I'm in Turbo Lift 4. Yeah. It seems like that detail just slipped by everybody.
But then Armin said, which is totally valid and correct, they could have corrected it all in post in modern sound. We could have looped it out, but they didn't do that either. So it's like, uh-oh. Yeah.
Little things that get by. Yep.
There's one later on that I caught too that I don't think anyone has mentioned. But
there's another one. Okay.
For me anyway.
Please make a note of that until we get to that.
Yes, I want to hear. We go back to Ops. Dax calls Miles O'Brien to come help them figure this out. And Kira calls down to Odo, just be patient. And this is where Luxana says, alone at last. And Odo is just terrified. And I think this was like a put. This is Les Landau doesn't do push-ins very often. But on this act out, he did this like dramatic push into Renee's face. It was like he was terrified, very terrified.
It made me feel so good.
I bet it did.
In the old days, we would have had a commercial break here, but in the streaming world, we just go right into ops. Mm-hmm. And Miles says everything should be working, that if it were not Cardassian, he could get them out very quickly. But Sisko tells him just to try and fix this. Mm-hmm. Kira calls down to Odo, reminds him to be patient. Don't try and goo your way out of this, basically. She says it's dangerous. It's a Cardassian lift. There's some kind of power flow conduits that are, you know, he could die, I guess, if he goos himself, tries to goo.
They're exposed. Yeah. So that he could electrify himself. Here's a question for both of you. How do you pronounce the word reroute?
Reroute. I would say reroute.
Thank you. He says reroute in here.
That's because you guys were born on the West Coast and Renee and I were born on the East Coast.
Would you really?
I was born on the East Coast.
We say route as opposed to route.
Okay, yeah, because on Voyager I often said we need to reroute power to the EPS relay. I said
reroute. That's because you grew up in Memphis and I grew up in Georgia. That's what it is.
No,
it's Southern, I think. Reroute.
Reroute. We're not going to reroute. We're going to reroute.
You just go left and take Route 65. Like that.
Fine. Okay. I'll go with that. Sorry.
Yeah, continue. But it's dangerous. So it kind of covers why Odo has the superpower to turn into goo, but he can't use it here to get out because it's...
That would end the episode. It'd be done.
Yeah, so. He'd be electrocuted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can't do it. We go, yes, it's multi-phase, exposed multi-phase alternating currents.
You see, go through just, their... Just bullshit. Just bullshit.
Exactly. Don't try to shapeshift your way out of this. Yeah, yeah, but they're stuck. Odo says in the scene, as they're waiting... trying to be patient, which he's not good at. He says, I just like to spend the time quietly. Just let's be quiet. I love this scene. This is one where Majel was great. She's trying to be quiet, but she can't help herself. She just got to talk.
But I love the fact that she's on top of him. I love that that there was no space between them. Which makes it very uncomfortable for Odo, of course. But yeah. I loved that. Juxtaposing the putting them right on top of each other.
Yeah.
Just thought that was great. They could have been separate, but they weren't.
Yeah.
Just the way the writers wrote that. Odo says, I'd prefer to pass the time quietly. Loxana, quietly. Odo, quietly. Loxana, of course. Odo goes, thank you. Loxana, the quiet man. She keeps going,
it's very 1940s film noir.
Yes.
I love that. That was
good. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But she can't be quiet, and she ultimately sits down on the floor of this lift and starts to tell a story about when she and Deanna Troi were trapped on a Ferengi ship. And then her story turns into like this romance novel, long story. It's a long monologue, by the way. She talks about making love to Damien, and Odo turns. I love the shot because it's over Odo's shoulder. And she keeps going and she keeps going. And he finally turns like towards the camera.
Yeah.
And he stares off and she asks, you know, what he's thinking, I think. And
what are you looking at? He's like, what are you looking at?
Yeah. What are you
looking at? It's like, oh, nothing. Just wondering how many volts are in that exposed circuit. Go on. Go on. Like he's trying to, he wants to go through. I'll get out.
Very funny. I'm curious in the scene as I watched it. And I loved Majel's work.
Mm.
But she was looking as she told this very long story. Mm. She was kind of looking. I wonder if she had cue cards, is what I'm getting at.
Was she John Mitchell-ing it?
Maybe? Yeah.
Okay.
James Mitchell-ing it? She might have had cue cards because it was a very long monologue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. You weren't there, Armin. So
I wasn't. I can't answer that. No.
We had a couple actors on our show that used cue cards. We had a few.
We may have had them. I just never saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never saw it. I would say the series regulars never did that because I never saw them do it. The guest stars, perhaps.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say no one ever put lines down somewhere where they could, you know, like we were talking about before.
Yeah, that's I find that to be more of a series regular thing. You know, for a guest star to have the audacity to come in and say, I don't know my lines. You better write them down on a poster board and let me look at them.
We had a few of those guest stars on Voyager. Yeah,
we had to have cue cards for them.
I remember kind of scrambling a couple of times.
Okay. Was that John Savage that you're talking about? Okay. But that's because he's dealing with his, you know, head injury or whatever he had going on. So he had.
That was one. There was a couple. But okay. And I don't criticize if Majel was using cue cards because it was a long. I looked at the script. It was the longest monologue I've ever seen on a Star Trek show.
Yeah.
And it was meant to be just like spit out fast and funny because that was the fun of it, is that she just can't stop talking. She's the blabbermouth.
Right.
But it did feel to me as I watched the coverage, like she kept her eyes.
So her eye line didn't make sense, right?
Leaving, Renee and kind of focusing. And it could have been the way she was performing it. She was just remembering. She was visualizing. Could have been that, or it could have been cue cards. But either way, whether it was cue cards or not, she did a fabulous job of this.
Yeah, it was great.
It was very well done.
Mm-hmm.
We go to the commander's office next. Bashir does not want to be the tour guide anymore. Mm-hmm. He says they're unhappy all the time. And Sisko shares that Curzon used to make him do the tours until he hit someone, which is very funny.
I do like Bashir's comment. They are the ambassadors of unhappy.
Yes.
That was a great line.
Yeah.
So much good writing in this one.
Good writing in this. Sisko does suggest that Bashir not hit them.
Yes.
He understands they're frustrating, but I'd suggest not hitting them.
Did Sisko, did he smile in this one too? Was he smiling in this scene?
Yes, he was. Okay. He was smiling in this whole episode. I loved it. Because often Avery is very serious.
And, yes.
You know, yes. That's his go-to is to be strong and serious.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So watching him have fun, he's got a great smile. It was nice to see.
Yep.
Yeah. We go to ops again. Miles tells Sisko the computer is acting differently. And it sounds differently. He says, listen to the voice. And he asks the computer something. And Miles says, it's not the same. It just doesn't sound the same. But
it's Sisko, not as sassy, right?
It's not as sassy. Mm-hmm. And it's something about like the pitch of it or something. Everything about it doesn't sound like the same computer. Mm-hmm. And he also says to Sisko, every time I leave to do something else, the computer creates a reason for me to come back. And so Sisko comments, it sounds like a child, sounds like a kid wanting you to, making a fuss to bring you back. So it's the first inkling that something's up here with maybe this probe and the computers are getting mixed up together.
Yeah. Here's the station log. So the station log says Odo and Ambassador Troy remain trapped in Turbo Lift 4. Here it is, right here.
Yeah.
Right. So this is
and they said 7
mm-hmm.
in the script. Yeah.
Yes. Earlier.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. He says they remain trapped. And as of yet, we've been unable to ascertain what it is that's causing our station's computer to malfunction. And I love this shot of, you know, we're usually in space for these captain's logs and or station logs. And this shot is underneath the station. I don't know if you noticed this, but it was an angle I hadn't seen.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful shot. Mm-hmm. Really pretty underneath shot. The light and everything that they did was great.
Yeah.
We go to ops and the whole team is discussing this computer problem. They think it may be a non-biological life form from the probe. And Kira says it's acting like a baby that was left on a doorstep or a stray puppy. So they're starting to work with these metaphors. And
actually, I think the stray puppy comes from Dax.
Does it?
Yeah.
Yep. So these ideas of you know, likening it to a puppy or a baby or something are starting to get repeated. They're trying to make sense of it. Miles thinks maybe if they put back all the files they downloaded from this probe, just put them all back. Maybe this thing will leave. So he goes to work on that. Kira says Odo's been in this lift for 4 hours now. And Sisko is worried about his regeneration cycle. He asks if she knows where he's at, but she doesn't. And she says he needs to get back in his pail. I have a question, Armin. Does Odo stand in the pail? He can't. It's not big enough.
He melts into the pail.
Does he kind of go head first? Like, that does he die? Right.
I don't think there's ever been a shot showing him dissolve into the pail.
Yeah.
But I would imagine he just melts into the pail. The same way that he drifts from where he's standing in this episode into the folds of her dress later on.
Yeah. Okay. So head first, like a dive into it.
Yeah.
So a dive or a...
You can't call it a head because it's not a head.
Right.
It's
just a top portion first into... Yeah. Okay.
The crest of the wave.
The crest of the wave.
There like a wave. Exactly. There you go.
The wave.
We have a little time cut. We go out of space and we come back in. Miles is trying to upload these files from the probe. The computer says it's unable to do so. And he tries again to upload them. And then all the power goes out.
Yeah.
So this is not going to be easy. O'Brien says, I thought it's not as easy as I thought it would be, Commander. Mm-hmm. So this solution probably isn't going to work. We go to the promenade. The lights go out on the promenade from this attempt.
It's a bottle show. They're saving money on utilities.
Yes. Turning off the lights. Very clever. Right.
Very clever.
Write it into the script. Bashir is continuing his tour. Lojal, the Vulcan, says O'Brien must not be very good if the powers, you know, breakers are tripping here and the lights are going out. But Bashir defends Miles in this scene. And I love his line. He says something about the edge of the frontier. He says something like, the edge of the frontier is one adventure after another. And I love that image that Bashir sort of...
Let us remember, that's almost verbatim what he says in the
pilot episode. Yes.
Yeah.
Remember that when he says it to, I think it's Kira.
Sisko. No, I think he says it to Cisco, but maybe it's Kira. Maybe it's Kira.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a great line, and I love the continuity of his character looks at this whole, you know, appointment on the station as being an adventure, that there's all these exciting things. It's kind of the way that the typical Star Trek ship that's going off exploring, the adventure's coming to you guys because you're right on the edge of this frontier.
Exactly. As I've said before, it's not wagon train. It's Dodge City.
Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
But they decide to go wait it out in their quarters. Back to the turbo lift. Odo is sweating now. That's the makeup effect you were talking about, Armin. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Turning to liquid slowly. Luoxana wants to know about him, ask about his hair, which I thought was very sweet.
Well, she's interested in hair, so
she's got big hair. She's got a giant
She asked if Odo studied hairstyles, and Odo says, well, if you must know, I imitated the hairstyle of the Bajoran man who was assigned to me. So at this point, we're getting some character development. We're getting some backstory. We now know that he was evidently being studied by a Bajoran scientist, which kind of makes me wonder, was he captured, or I mean, was he under guard as well?
Or in a laboratory or something?
Whatever it was.
Yeah. Well, certainly he was in a laboratory. He was in a laboratory and he was being studied.
Yes.
And I like this because we're getting finally, as you said, some backstory on this character that's been an enigma for all these episodes. Yeah. We're finding out more about his personal life, which I found very interesting. But I ask myself, she's a Betazoid. Can't she just read these things?
I know.
Sorry.
I thought the same thing. You're right. Because they mentioned it in the episode that she can read minds.
And what kind of mind does he have? It's a liquid.
She can't read a shapeshifter mind then.
Well,
like Ferengis.
Should say that then.
Yes. Okay. Another missing episode.
Missing scene. Yeah.
Missing scene.
Okay.
Yes, missing scene.
But he does share that when he was being studied, that he tried to fit in by going to these parties and doing party tricks, parlor tricks, and being the life of the party. And he says, I hate parties. So you see that was not easy for him.
He came with me to Majel's parties often.
Did he?
He didn't hate parties.
Renee didn't hate parties.
Renee likes parties. Odo hates parties.
Because he got to do party tricks. He did.
Yeah. But you do see some empathy from Luoxana. She says, well, maybe you've been going to the wrong parties. If you come to mine, all of my guests will be there to entertain you. And the minute she said that in this scene, I immediately thought about Robbie going to the party that he told me about, you know, and all the parties she threw. So it's almost like they knew that she was
I didn't make that connection, but you're right.
Yes.
It's very possible. It's very possible. Mm.
He does let her know that he is very close to becoming liquid. Every 16 hours, he has to return to his liquid state, and he's an hour 15. So we do find that
less than an hour left.
Yes. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We go to ops next. Miles is trying to manually transfer the files onto 6 isolinear rods now. New plan. They try to distract the computer while he's doing that by these random complex tasks. Everybody's joining in, asking the computer, do this.
Did you guys understand what was Inara's pulling out those liquid
tubes,
isolinear chips, basically, right? But is she trying to, what's happening? They're distracting the computer, but they're pulling these chips out.
They're
one
downloading
by one.
The probes, the computer chips. Files onto those 6 rods.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So they're just trying to separate out.
To isolate it, correct?
Yes, to isolate
it. That's what it was. Okay.
Yep. They're trying to do that, but eventually sparks start flying everywhere. The computer is overloaded, and Kira sees a huge plasma surge on the habitat ring. She sees that reading. We cut to this corridor in the habitat ring with Bashir and the ambassadors, and this huge fireball comes right at them, explodes right at them. And
Robbie, Do you think that was the same fireball they used in the prior episode where Kira was envisioning the imaginary fireball?
It probably looked like some visual effects elements of that same fireball.
I thought it was the exact same fireball.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it was the same.
It's a bottle show. Very similar corridor.
Exactly. Okay.
Yes. So we see this explode with Bashir and the ambassadors. Then we go back to ops. They're detecting a big fire and four life forms that are in danger down there. And the fire suppression systems are not responding. They're not working. Sisko says, let's get some manual fire gear and get an emergency crew down there now. So they head off for action.
Speaking of manual fire gear, I know we don't see it yet, but when we do see that, those fire extinguishers, they look amazing. They look super cool. They look like almost like a caulking gun or something like that.
Oh, yeah,
just,
they did.
They were just really compact and cool. First, I thought it was a weapon. Then I was like, no, that's the fire suppression gear. It has
to be.
Because it was red. So it has to be like a fire extinguisher.
It has to be. Red is for fire.
For fire.
Means fire. Red means danger.
Yes.
Back in the corridor, Bashir's trying to manually open the door, but they're trapped and the fire is getting bigger. And I was very impressed with these practical effects, like having a big fire on stage like that. I know it was at the end of the corridor. They probably built a fire safe area down there, but it was a big fire. It was a big practical effect.
Yeah.
It was very impressive. Yeah. So they can't get the door open.
And this is the first time I've ever seen them pull the door.
Oh, that little latch
mechanism
thing.
Off. Yeah, and then there's a latch underneath that. I went, wow. That's interesting. Why is there a latch underneath them? Why underneath all that technology is something as simple as a latch?
But what kind of bothered me is that it was so easy to pull that thing off. Let's say if you're trying to shut off one section of a corridor from some people that are chasing you, some bad guys. So all they got to do is go, just pull it off and pull the latch and it opens.
Open it manually.
Too easy. Yeah.
It seems like there would be another code or something.
There has to be something, some device that helps pry that thing off. It was so easy with their fingertips to both Bashir and Sisko do the same thing. They pull it off so easily.
So we come back and Sisko and Kira are there with a team. They're trying to open these doors. They try to phaser it, but we realize the Cardassian titanium alloy is too strong. Is it titanium or Cardassian?
Terranium.
Yeah. I knew I was wrong in that
That's
note.
That's all right.
Okay. Titanium's real. Terranium is not.
I see you have a problem with technobabble.
I do. I definitely do. Always have. Sisko sends the team back to ops to tell them to get the fire suppression back online or they're going to lose their people. And this is where the crewman says, "I, sir," and we see it. Okay. I think we see it on camera.
That's Randy.
Yeah.
This Randy is Odo's stand-in. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
From day one all the way through the end of season 7.
I don't remember that far back. I don't know from day one, but certainly for most of the years.
Yeah. I bet it was most of the run because all the stand-ins on our show were pretty much the same, except for mine. Mine seemed to...
Yours? Yeah.
Mine flipped around a lot.
Mine flipped around too.
Kira's flipped around as well. Mine was there from day one.
From day one.
Yeah, because remember I had John Tampoya, then I had Stuart.
So
the bigger Asian guy, yes.
I always think of John as your stand-in.
No, he just did it part of the time. That's it. Yeah.
And like Randy, David, who was my stand-in, many of the stand-ins got to be prominent extras, but not speaking until the last season, and then they
got some
writers
lines.
Gave them some lines. Yeah.
That's great. We go to ops next. O'Brien's up in ops trying to understand what is happening. None of this makes sense. He thinks it's acting like a scared puppy.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to like all of this attention.
Yeah.
And it wants to be where the action is. And he realized, wait a minute, we've been trying to separate it from what it thrives on.
Let's do the opposite.
Mm-hmm. But he doesn't explain what his plan is. He just goes, aha, I've got an idea. And
I have to build a doghouse.
Yes. And Dax does not know anything about puppies in this scene, clearly, because her response is like, what are you talking about?
Wouldn't you think that if he had an idea that would affect the entire station, that he would have to move it up the chain of command?
You'd think.
To ask permission to do this? Wouldn't he at least announce his plan to Sisko or to Kira and say, this is my plan. Do I have your permission to do this? Mm-hmm. But that didn't happen.
No, that didn't. They were in an emergency. Sisko's fighting a fire and trying to manually open a door. And things are bad. Things are looking bad for the station.
I mean, nobody was dying except those guys who had the fireball. But but no one was dying where they had to do it immediately.
That's right. True. That's true. He did go out on a limb here and do something that he fills Sisko in on at the end of the episode. He goes, oh, by the way, I did this thing.
Yeah. Thanks for telling me now.
Yeah, exactly.
Armin, did we already pass or have we not gotten to that?
Not gotten to it yet.
Continue, Robbie.
Okay, so we're back in the turbo lift with Odo and Lwaxana. And
you're getting good at this.
Yeah. Every time you say it, Armin and I are just going to golf clap for you every time you get it right. Okay.
Odo is turning into liquid now, though. He can't hold out much longer. And he's turned away from her in the scene.
He's embarrassed. He doesn't want her to see it.
Oh. Well, he says he's not ashamed, though, which I think is
bullshit.
Important. You, really?
Yeah, I think so. I think he is ashamed. That's the whole point of them being together. He is ashamed. Otherwise, he would just do it. It's not it's not the end of the world.
No. Yeah. He says it's a private thing, though. He says
so he's ashamed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she takes off her wig. We see her hand come into frame as he's faced away from her. And
holding
she's
the wig.
Holding the wig. And she says to him that she's never let anyone see her like this either. And that it's okay.
And that's shame, too.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's true. Man, but it's a big gesture and it's a big, I guess, bonding moment where they both connect on this level of how they have parts of themselves that they hide.
Right. And I think the theme, we'll get to this later, but is of privacy. Privacy is an important part, I think, of this episode. Mm. And so they are sharing their privacies.
Yeah. Well, once she does this with the wig, he does turn into liquid and she offers her dress. She lifts her dress and he sort of falls, spills over like a wave, like you described. And she holds her dress out to catch him. And there he is, liquid.
And her lines, just, it's so simple. Let go. I'll take care of you. And this is definitely the most emotional scene for me watching. I mean, I was getting emotional just watching this whole scene, this whole, just the interaction,
the whole
between
story
the two
with the and two just, of them yes, was really and tender just, and sweet.
Yes. I mean, you empathize for Odo now. Before you just thought, okay, this guy's just, all he does is he's like a Marine drill sergeant. He's barking at everybody. And now I'm like Team Odo. I'm like waving the flag. I love this guy, you know? All right.
When they were casting this part of Odo, what they kept saying to actors who were auditioning is, we want someone to be Marshall Dillon.
Oh.
Mm.
And so there's a lot of that in the character. Mm-hmm. But thanks to episodes like this, we begin to see the soft side of Marshall Dillon.
Armin, can you explain who Marshall Dillon is for those who are listening that don't understand that reference?
Marshall Dillon is, I think it was Dodge City was the name of it. And Marshall Dillon was the marshal, and he was the guy that helped everybody. He was the tough guy. He faced down, you know, people who came in trying to disrupt the town. Mm-hmm. He was a very tough guy. He was the star in the sense that he wore the marshal's badge, and everybody looked to him for support. Yeah. And he was good at his job. So that's Marshall Dillon, and it's a sort of a iconographic stereotype for people who watch TV for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, we go to the corridor next. Sisko and Kira are still working on opening the door. She tells the crewman to prepare first aid for Bashir and the ambassadors. If they're going to get in, they need oxygen. They need, things to treat plasma burns. So
a runabout. They say, get a runabout ready. We might have to transport people to Bajor because we don't have the equipment to treat them here.
Yeah. So things are not looking good at this point. Go back to ops. And Miles has created, or he creates in the scene, a sub-program and reroutes the main computer backup to that. So he takes the backup of their whole computer mm-hmm. that the puppy was interested in, puts it into this sub program, yeah. kind of walls it off.
And he calls the sub program Pup. That's what
yes, he calls it Pup. And as soon as the transfer is complete, the lights come back on. Come back on in ops. We go to the corridor. The lights are on here too. Fire suppression is back online. So they manually can open the door now, and it's a mess. Mm-hmm. They think at first that they're all dead, that the ambassadors and Bashir are all dead. And then Bashir pops open a Jeffries tube hatch. I guess it's a Jeffries tube. It's a Cardassian
version.
That's
what it looks like.
Yeah. They were hiding in there. And they're all fine, and they all thank Julian. They give Julian all the credit mm-hmm. and say that he will need a commendation after this, after his heroism. Mm-hmm. And Bashir's very, very humble. He says, I was just at the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to see that storyline, you know, offers something for Bashir's character, that, you know, he's smart. And even though he didn't want to be doing this, he ends up being a hero. And they change their attitude about him, which I thought was nice, a nice mm-hmm. move in that story. Mm-hmm. Back on the promenade, Odo's back.
Yeah. That's the point.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So he's back.
Odo is back. He looks 100%.
Yes. And how did that happen?
I don't know.
Oh, there's not enough time for him to have regenerated. Am I right?
And
it's got to be a time cut. It's got to be.
Yeah, but
they cut off the elevator, the turbo lift. So the time is whenever they say the systems are back online, that must be when the turbo lift works again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that tells us what the time period is. But it seems to me that if he really needs the pail to regenerate,
yeah.
When did he get into the pail to regenerate back to the solid that he, you know, as Odo? That it's not a mistake, but I
well,
went,
when, it may when be a mistake.
It may be a mistake.
I hadn't thought about the timeline here either, but this scene happens and suggests that it's like the next day.
It can't be that they step off of the turbo lift. They step off of the turbo lift that they were trapped in. Whether it's seven or four, it makes no difference. But they step off the turbo lift.
So it's not the next
day. Maybe you saw it as the next day. I didn't.
I saw it as the next day. I saw it as like time passed. But here's the problem. If I'm right and they're thinking this is the next day, the next scene in Ops, Sisko comes in and asks Mile, what did you do? So it feels pretty continuous.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Well, I mean, okay. Look at the lines though. I mean, Odo says, I know that wasn't exactly what you had in mind for your picnic. He wouldn't say that the next day. It's immediate. Yeah. But then my question is this, has there been any reference to how long the regeneration cycle takes for Odo to regenerate?
Well,
is
he says
10 minutes.
Every 16
is it an
hours.
Hour? I know every 16 hours he has to do it, but is it for a 4-hour period? Is it for a 12 minute period? We don't know that.
Yeah,
right?
We don't know that.
We've never been given that information.
That's right. That's right. And that's why I thought it was a mistake.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. If it's only 4 minutes, then he could have done it.
Then he could have been, yeah.
But why does he always do it in the pail?
In the pail.
What about the pail makes it the perfect place as opposed to being in the
in
folds
the
of
dress.
The dress?
Yeah.
Or just on the ground, on the floor, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. Good catch, Armin. Yeah.
Well, I've had a couple more years on this than you guys.
Yes. Well, whether it was 4 minutes or 4 days, Odo is back. He looks 100%. He looks great. Yeah. And Luoxana has her wig back on. He apologize. Yes.
No, I was just going to say he doesn't deserve a clap for that last one.
Oh, no.
No, it wasn't a great one. It was a Luoxana.
I'll give one. That's it. You just get.
I added syllables and all kinds of things.
You went Luoxana.
Yes,
that's what you said.
But he apologizes.
She became French.
Yes,
she became French.
Odo apologizes to her in the scene, though, mm-hmm. and she says, "No, you don't need to apologize. The company was perfect." He does ask for her discretion. He appreciates if she's discreet and doesn't tell anyone. Mm-hmm. And she says, next time she'll give him a lot more to appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
And she walks off and he's very interested because he watches her leave. I felt like there was a little elevator eyes as she left. It was very cute.
It was very cute. Yes.
And our last scene, we go to Ops. Cisco returns, asks what Miles did. He says he got this visitor out of the main computer and into this sub program, this walled off place. Cisco doesn't think that they should just leave it there on the station, though. And Miles says, I'll take care of it. Mm-hmm. And Dax agrees with Miles. She's like, it's just another new life form visiting our station. And Cisco responds, well, just keep it off the furniture. And he leaves and Miles smiles.
Writing.
It's very good writing because they very slyly introduce the idea of dog, of pup. And eventually it grows and grows and eventually ends up to this. That's very good writing.
But you know, this ending though, if you think about it, Robbie, on Voyager, anytime we had any alien, anything that was in our ship or in our system, we always expelled it at the end and we were rid of it. But here in DS9, this thing is here to stay. It's not going anywhere.
Does it come back, Armin? Do you remember if they
it doesn't come back. It just stays in there. And we don't refer to it that I know of again.
Yeah.
But it is, we don't expel it. You're absolutely right. We accept aliens.
You accept it. Yes.
We expel them, you accept them. Yeah. Very nice. Very nice of you. Very evolved of you.
Yes, this is the least xenophobic of all the Star Trek series. It's like, yes, it is.
Everyone's welcome.
Yeah.
Everyone is welcome. Welcome to Quarks. Yep.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The theme or moral or lesson of this episode for me was that people are not always what you expect them to be and that it's good to be open-minded. I think that's true in the computer probe storyline that they expect one thing and it's really something else. They have to be open-minded. I think it's true in the Luoxana and Odo storyline that, you know, they sort of expect a little something different out of each other, but they learn to be open-minded and accept each other. So that's my
lesson. Essentially the old adage, you can't judge a book by its cover is where you're coming from. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Armin, what is your lesson or theme?
Well, mine's tangential to Robbie's. It's on the same line, but slightly different. Mine is that everything needs companionship and nothing desires to be alone. Odo thinks he wants to be alone, but realizes, no, I want companionship. He learns that during the course of this episode. The entity in this that they adopt, the pet, the pup, that too wants companionship.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dogs want companionship. Nothing wants to be alone. Even the ambassadors, they think they're the be-all and the end-all, but they too find the realization that they need company, in this case, Bashir, to save them. So I think that all fits together. But it's part and parcel of what Robbie said as well.
I like the way you put it, though. Nothing wants to be alone. It's very concise and it's emotionally based. I like your moral there. What about you, Garrett?
Yeah, I think for me, I guess I would say sometimes you have to let go to truly be free. That's it.
Nice.
Okay.
Well, there you go. There is our episode, The Forsaken. Thanks for joining us this week. Next time, we are going to be recapping, discussing, and reviewing the episode Dramatis Personae. And just so everyone knows, there will be no new podcast next week. We're only doing 4 episodes a month now. So we'll skip a week. And the next episode, Dramatis Personae, will be released on April 8th at midnight on Patreon. and April 9th at midnight on all streaming platforms. So join us for Dramatis Personae next time.
Be there or be square.
And for all of you Patreon patrons, stay tuned for your bonus material for this episode, The Forsaken.
Do not forsake me, oh my darling.